Working Cows Podcast, episode 80, bonus episode.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
Howdy, everybody. Another one of these bonus episodes, kind of focusing on what's going on in Nebraska and other places. Still more flooding going on in South Dakota and in other places. And just how do we think about recovering from these times? And how do we think about tragedy-proofing, risk-proofing our business? And wanted to talk to Dave Pratt, who was instrumental in some of the recovery efforts here in South Dakota after the Atlas Blizzard of October of 2013, and just reached out to him, and he was willing on short notice to sit down with me. Dave is, of course, the president, the owner of Ranch Management Consultants, and really appreciate Dave taking some time to sit down with me while he's out on the East Coast doing some work with Executive Link. So, Dave, thanks for your time today.
My pleasure.
We have been hit in the ranching community with, I guess, a tragedy is how I would describe it, with the storms in Nebraska and the flooding in eastern Nebraska. How do people start to think about what has happened, and how do they start to pick up the pieces?
Oh, boy, that's that's a big one. It feels audacious to pretend that I know the answers, but sometimes you don't need to know the answers. It's not my bank. It's not my family. It's not my cows. It's not my land. Really, what I need to know are the questions. So I think there's a couple of angles to approach this on. First of all, if you haven't been impacted and you want to help, just show up. Don't ask people what they need. Just show up and get to work. Roll up your sleeves, be proactive, take initiative, and help. And don't just help today or tomorrow. It's 3 or 4 weeks from now where a lot of the real pain from recovery is going to set in. So it's great to show up and be useful right now, but it means every bit as much and maybe even more to show up 3 or 4 weeks from now and help. I've always found that when you're in trouble, that it helps to provide some structure. This may sound silly, but there's an old Chris Christopherson song. The song is "If You Could See Me Now," and it's kind of a corny, campy song. But there's a line in there that I just love, and it says, "Looking back and longing for the freedom of my chains." I love that line, "Freedom of my chains." A lot of times, people feel like structure is inhibiting, like it limits what they can do. I think structure is freedom. It gives us safety in thinking, in knowing that we're going to have thought through all aspects of this, because the structure will guarantee that if we follow the structure. Now, we've done disaster recovery workshops this really started after the Atlas Blizzard in South Dakota. And a few months after that, the South Dakota Grasslands Coalition had me come in and do a workshop with a couple hundred people in the room. And, you know, who am I to talk? These people have suffered tremendous losses. But again, all I really had to do is have the questions and help them answer their own questions. And one of the things we actually did is form them into Executive Link style boards, because it's always easier to see how someone else ought to be doing things. And sometimes you can see a solution for someone else that would have never occurred to you for yourself. But once you see it for them, it's like, oh, I could do that too. And so it was interesting, because I was a little nervous about putting these people who had never worked together, didn't know one another, and put them into boards and expect them to immediately function, at least after a half a day of training. But having the shared pain of the experience they'd just gone through, they bonded immediately in a very successful meeting. So after that, we started doing workshops for other types of problems. We've done fire recovery workshops in Montana, and Texas, Kansas, and British Columbia. And in our mind's eye, the same structure for working through issues like this applies to all of these disasters. maybe in slightly different ways, but the same model applies. And here's the model. Any of these risks impacts at least four things. They impact our land, they impact animals, they impact money, and they impact people. And within, and if we take even one step back from that, there are three elements to managing risk in any business. And one is to try to risk-proof the business. Now, we might be reluctant to chase that one down in the midst of the disaster that's just happened or continuing to happen for some folks. But to risk-proof the business, then to figure out what is our strategy for managing through risk so that next time something like this happens, and I don't know if it'll happen to eastern Nebraska again, but it's going to happen somewhere to somebody. You know you're going to have another fire at some point. You know there's going to be an unseasonable blizzard. You can debate climate change all you want, but tell you what, things are getting more erratic, and the severity of events is getting more severe. There's no question about that. So we need to be ready. So we need to risk-proof the business. We need to figure out how we're going to manage through risk once it occurs, and then we need to figure out how we're going to recover from it once it happens. And so those are the three basic elements. And within each of those, we need to risk-proof the animals, the land, the money, and the people. We need to figure out a way to manage land, animals, and people. And we need a strategy for recovering when it comes to land, animals, money, and people. And that basic framework I've found extremely useful for helping people figure out how they're going to respond to this. So the questions that I would have when it comes to things like the land. I mean, first we've got to take a look at what's the impact that's happening. But how can you protect the land? How could you create an infrastructure that would be less susceptible to the impact of floods? And I don't know if that means when fences get replaced, if they get replaced by single wires or other types of things, or maybe the strategy is to avoid the need for infrastructure at all. Maybe everything is free and everything goes seasonal. But what would be a strategy for land and anything attached to the land, whether it's water development or fencing or buildings? To me, all of that is land. Anything attached to the land is land. Just like vehicles and machinery, anything that people use or drive or fix, I shouldn't say fix, but anything people use or drive or that does work, all part of people and labor. So anyway, what are the strategies to insulate the land so that these kinds of things are not, don't have as big an impact? And then what are the strategies used to manage land through an event like this? Whether that means as soon as you have any inkling this is going to happen, that is there anything that gets done with infrastructure? And maybe in the long term, and you know, we go back to strategizing, with drought, sometimes people are, you know, if you want to expand the ranch, well, maybe it's a good idea to expand the ranch 500 miles away in a place, you know, if you're impacted by drought, some other place might not be. Anyway, things like that. And before you start evaluating the strategies, you know, people start rejecting ideas before they've been vetted. And that keeps people from wanting to even come up with ideas. So it's important to let the ideas come out, be put on the table, and then, after they're all out, then start to evaluate and figure out what's more likely to work and what's not. And then the final thing is, how do you recover from these things? But that framework of step by step by step gives a person a little, you know, I'm not saying we should take the emotion out of the process, because there's a lot of pain going on and people have to be able to express that. But at some point in making decisions, we've got to take the emotion and set it aside for a little while to rationally think through this. And a process like this can help. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. So where do you start if you're going to start thinking about the recovery process when you're talking about land, animals, money, and people? I mean, I guess probably the first inclination of most people to start with the animals. Is that the right place to start? I mean, when we're days and weeks removed from this event?
Well, I think you almost have to start with the animals. If there are dead animals involved, you got to do something. If there's animals that are hungry, you got to do something, just because there's that pressing urgency of being a good steward and being a humane caretaker of these animals in this land. So I do think it has to start there. The other piece that really is concurrent, and it's not like, you know, people can walk and chew gum at the same time. So there are some things that can happen simultaneously. But I think to recognize the shock that people are in, and some of that shock's not going to set in. You know, I remember a kid in South Dakota during the Atlas Blizzard, or right after the Atlas Blizzard, he and I were having dinner together. And this kid had like 100 cows, 110 cows, something like that. And of course, that blizzard happened way early in the season, and the animals were still on the government ground and had not weaned the calves, and they didn't have their winter coat. Well, he lost something like of the 110 cows, I think he lost 100, and all the calves were killed. Hmm. And his response to me over dinner was, look, I don't need anybody's sympathy. I just need to know what to do. Hmm. It's inspired stuff, but it's probably also naive to think that he's okay emotionally. Anybody who suffers that kind of loss is going to have to go through a grieving process and to suppress that, which he'd been doing. And sometimes you have to suppress that. And when the crisis, you know, there's so many things that need to be done right now. People can take that emotion and set it aside, but at some time it's going to come out. And if it does, you know, if you don't think it's going to come out, it'll leak out in all sorts of ways that you don't anticipate. But it starts with the animals, but I think you got to also keep your eye on the people to know that they're going through a mess of emotions right now, and most of us are not really good at dealing with those emotions. And I think the other thing to keep in mind as you're doing this is to keep people in the loop. If you've got operating loans and things like that, your banker, don't be hiding out. You need to be straight up that I'm going to have issues with this. And, you know, they're human beings too. And there may be bank rules and policies to follow, but you have a relationship with it. You know, in any business, the relationship with the person who's financing the operation is one of those relationships. It's pretty darn important. And if you don't have a relationship with your banker, you either need to build one, or if it's not somebody you can have a relationship with, you need to get a different banker.
You know, my own story is witnessing the aftermath of Atlas. It hit just east of where I live, and seeing those people and watching them go through grief. I mean, it wasn't something like grief. It was actual grief. And there's stages to that, and we need to recognize that and be willing to give people the space that they need to process all of those things. And I think timely communication is a big part of that.
Absolutely. Yeah, people tend to hole up. You know, they just, they clam up. I remember back in 2009, right after the economy collapsed, everybody holed up. Nobody had any money. They're all worried about what the future was going to look like economically, not just for themselves, but for the country. And when people feel like that, they tend to crawl inside themselves. Nobody was talking about it. Nobody wanted to visit with their banker. Nobody wanted to come to the school. I mean, our enrollment probably dropped in half that year. I took the opposite approach. I used that as an opportunity, saying that, look, if the world's going to be like this, if I have a new reality to deal with, then I'm going to have to change the way I deal with things. And so I went to more training that year and reached out to get more help than I had ever done before. And every year since, RMC has been on this climb. Now, this isn't about us. We're not the ones that took a hit from a disaster like this. But when people feel themselves crawling inside themselves, they need to really evaluate, is that the smartest thing to be doing right now? Here's the interesting thing. People feel like they need to be independent, and that's admirable. And they feel like asking for help is a sign of weakness. But I'd like you to consider this. The days when you've had the most joy in your life, where you've felt the most rewarding sense of accomplishment that you've ever felt, haven't those been the days when you've been able to help somebody else? You know, somebody who really needed help, and you were there for them, and you gave meaningful help. And at the end of the day, when you walked away, you might not have even gotten a thank you. But when you saw what you contributed, and you probably did get a thank you, but when you walked away at the end of the day that was probably one of the best feelings you ever had. And yet, here's the other side of that. I'm hesitant to ask you for help. And yet, if I do ask you for help and you deliver the help, when you're done, you feel great about it. So I really wish people wouldn't be so hesitant to reach out. I understand not wanting to impose, but there is a time for that fierce independence, and there's a time to acknowledge that some events in life are bigger than us. And there are times when it's appropriate to reach out, and you're actually giving people an opportunity to feel great. I mean, I don't know who first said this, but I heard a long time ago this quote, and I believe that this is the key question to life, really. And that is, what is life for if it isn't to help one another? I think that's it. Whoever asked that question, I think, nailed why we're here. And this is an opportunity for people to help one another. So, man, don't hole up and crawl inside yourself and be afraid to ask for help, because people are there and people are good and people want to help.
Sure. You know, I wrote up a brief post on my website last night at workingcows.net/Nebraska and just kind of wanting to get some resources out there. But as I was writing that, some things came to mind from scripture that I felt inclined to share. And one of them was that Job's friends who showed up after his tragedy were doing a really good thing when they just sat there and were with him and listened and didn't offer any advice. It wasn't till later when they started to try and offer advice that they started to step in a hole and really literally incur the wrath of God later on. But I appreciate what you said about showing up and just showing up now and showing up later and being willing to help where you can, and not waiting to be asked, but to show up. And sometimes that is going to involve just some being there as a presence, not necessarily as a set of hands and a back right off the bat, just being willing to listen and let people know that you're with them and that you're there. So,
yeah, man, you nailed that one. I'll tell you what, we actually do a sales training. For it is going to seem like a rabbit trail, but it's not. We do sales training for people in our graduate program. And what we tell people, the purpose of making a sale is not to make money. That's the secondary purpose. The purpose of making a sale is to help somebody solve their problem. In order to help them solve their problem, you have to understand their problem. In order to understand their problem, you have to learn how to listen. And not listen to respond, not listen to sympathize, to judge, to critique, or even to offer solutions. It's simply to listen to understand. That is such a powerful tool. And in a time like this, I mean, you want to go out and do physical things that will help people recover. But sometimes the biggest thing you can do is just to let them know that you care enough to understand. That's huge.
The word compassion literally means to suffer with, meaning that you are entering into the suffering of that person and you're helping them carry the load of that suffering. And so you've got to be there by them as much as you are able, be there physically by them and let them know that you're there to help them carry the load of whatever suffering they have incurred. So, you know, that's a lot about the emotional side of it, but what do you see as some hands-on practical things that people can do when they show up as far as how do we help as people who are on the outside looking in?
Well, there's fences that are going to be down. There's ditches that are going to need to be redug. There's a bunch of crap around that's going to need to be sorted out and picked up. There's buildings that have been damaged. I remember that when I started working a long time ago in another life with the University of California, the first winter I was on the job, there's a huge, huge flood in about half of our county. And I spent about 2 weeks picking up carcasses of sheep and cattle, going around in boats, dragging carcasses over to huge burn piles. And what an awful, awful thing to do. But I mean, there's all sorts of things. Of course, those are the immediate things, but the fence repairs and things like that will are much longer term projects. You know, it comes up that what can you do about something like this in the future? And I think people are quick to think, okay, I got to figure out how to recover, as opposed to the other two pieces of this model, of this risk management model. And that's to how do you risk proof your business and how do you manage through something like this? But I think those are important things. You know, what are the lessons that people can learn? At the end of every day of the school, we ask people to do a what went well, what could be better for the day. And I think we do that for a couple of reasons. One is to give the instructor feedback on how the day went, what they might need to reinforce the next day. But part of that is to get people in the habit to sit down and evaluate what in their own businesses and their own lives, what's going well and what could we be doing better. Well, I think in the aftermath of something like this, that's a really good discussion to have. And it may not seem like it applies directly, but for example, with the fires we've been dealing with, when we go through this, what went well, what could be better? Well, what could be better maybe is to make this a seasonal enterprise and not have animals here when we're dealing with fire. In California right now, I think you have to question, if I'm going to stockpile feed, which is an essential step, if I'm going to have cattle year round and stockpile feed so that I don't have to feed hay in the winter, well, then I've got a tremendous source of fuel just during the peak of the California fire season. Is a cow-calf enterprise, given the fire risk, the increased fire risk that we have now, is a cow-calf enterprise the right enterprise for the foothills of California where this fire risk is so incredibly high during that season? Because a responsible manager with cows is going to stockpile grass, and that means I'm going to have fuel. So is the risk-proofing strategy in that case to either not have a cow-calf enterprise, to have a seasonal enterprise, or have a migratory herd where that herd is going somewhere else when the risk of fire is so high? In the case of flood, I don't know what enterprises people ought to have, but maybe they, you know, there is a season where it's more likely to flood than others. Is it possible that there is some hill ground or another place that is less prone to flooding where animals ought to be during that season? Now, these aren't the questions that people want to deal with right now because they're in the midst of just doing the physical things that need to be done immediately to recover from this thing. But in the longer term, those are important questions to be asking.
Sure. What are there other tools for risk proofing? I mean, is insurance and some of that stuff seems like a very important part of risk proofing?
You know, it probably is. I'm not a good person to talk about that, Clay. A lot of our guys figure that they find ways to self-insure. You know, here comes a question of, we ask people how much profit they want to make in their business. And of course, it's interesting how many people struggle with that question. I think they may have never considered even making a profit, at least a true economic profit, let alone how much they want to make. But one of the things we talk about is you can't really come up with a profit target until you know what your profit is for. So we ask another question. Why do you want to make a profit? If you made a profit of $200,000, how would you deploy that profit to build a better life and a better business? Or would it be invested off the farm? Would it be to grow the business? Would it be deployed in some way to be able to insure yourself? Now, maybe there's insurance programs out there that are exactly the right thing to do. Right now, for example, drought insurance. As a taxpayer, I'm not very happy about the drought insurance program, because the payback is over 100%. And as a taxpayer, I'm subsidizing the cattle industry. Well, okay, that's what it is. But if I was a rancher and I didn't mind taking government programs out of one side of my mouth while I'm bad-mouthing government programs out of the other, I think I'd have to seriously consider signing up for drought insurance. You know, it's for most people, it's a really good investment. When it comes to flood insurance, maybe. I think the crazy thing is for people who've had damage, I mean, this may have been a 1 in 300 year event, but it seems like we're having 1 in 300 year events about every 10 years now. So, I'd be real cautious about just recreating what I had, just replacing what I had and expecting, no problems down the road. I mean, maybe this was a one-off event, but there's a lot of one-off events that seem to be happening every few years now.
Yeah. So could you give me an example of a set of circumstances or steps that somebody might go through to self-insure?
We have, we've taken a portion of our profit. You know, we're a different situation, but the same principle applies. And we've put it in different investments, some of which are very liquid, so that if something happened, we can draw on that. Another way to self-insure is to have some period in Ranch Management Consultants. We have 6 months of operating expenses in a completely liquid account. So if something happened and we had no income for 6 months, we'd still be okay. I think it's unlikely that we'd have a problem much worse than that. For some people, they may want to do that for a year. But there's things like that a person could do. There's ways to insulate yourself from risk, and then there's ways of managing risk. And that the self-insure aspect is a risk management strategy. So having that liquid account, having essentially liquid investments that you can use to draw and create capital to, or take that money, use it as capital to rebuild infrastructure, things like that.
Sure. Well, I think we've kind of covered at least the outline that you laid out in the first portion of this episode, as far as how do we go about risk-proofing our land, our animals, our money, and our people, and then how do we recover from these tragedies in these areas. Are there any other things that you'd like to share, or anything that you would hope somebody would take away from this brief episode?
Yeah, there's something I'd like to offer. There's a tool we use. It's called the Six Thinking Hats Due Diligence Process. And it sounds real hokey, but it's a very effective tool for objectively evaluating ideas. You know, if somebody comes up with an idea in terms of a way to recover or risk proof or manage through one of these things, and our tendency, especially when we're under stress, is just to shoot it down. It certainly isn't to think it through. But there's a very simple process that starts. We call them the six thinking hats, and each hat has a different color. And that's just to give you a hook so you can remember it. There's the white hat. The white hat is just the facts. And it starts with the facts. What is the situation? Here are the facts. The second question is, or the second hat is the green hat. The green hat is for growing ideas. It's a creative hat. So the green hat is, what's the idea that we're here to evaluate? Yeah, we want to change the seasonal enterprises, or we want to use all temporary infrastructure, or whatever it might be. Then the next hat is the yellow hat. The yellow hat is supposed to be for a sunny disposition, a bright outlook. What's the upside? So if we did this strategy, what is the upside? What are all the positives that could go along with it? Then there's the black hat. Of course, in the Westerns, the bad guy wears the black hat. So the black hat is the negative hat. It's all the reasons why the idea might be bad. So we just looked at the upside. Now we look at the downside. And we actually have a way of scoring those that I'm not going to get into now, because it'd put everybody to sleep. But the next hat is the green hat again, to take a look at how do we make the upside even better and more likely, and how do we make the downside smaller and less likely. And after doing that, then we put on the red hat. And the red hat is the emotional hat, the color of, you know, on Valentine's Day, those hearts are red. And when somebody's seeing red, they're seeing, they're feeling anger. So red is the color of strong emotion. So after we've modified the idea to improve the upside and minimize the downside, we now say, how do I feel about this idea? How do we all feel about this idea? And then the final hat is a blue hat, and that's a facilitative hat. And that's now that we've evaluated this idea, improved the idea, and said how we feel about the idea, what are we going to do about the idea? Who's going to do what and when? That's the process. And if anybody, that's a lot to absorb in my 3-minute rant here about the six thinking hats. But if there's anybody who feels like they'd find that process useful to evaluate some of the things that they're looking at right now, I've got a paper on that and another process that will provide some of the emotion out of the decision and give them some objective tools. And if anybody would like that, I've got a PDF that describes that process in detail that I'd be happy to email anybody. So all they have to do is email me. They should send that to pratt@ranchmanagement.com. So PRATT at ranchmanagement, all one word, .com. And I'd be happy to send them that process.
That is a good process. I've been exposed to it myself. And there's some really neat things that go along with it. So I won't go into any more depth than that, just to say that it's worthwhile to look at. Any final words of encouragement for people who are currently in the thick of it?
Hang in there. There's a better day around the corner. And if you'll ask for help, you'll find out just how good people are. I'll tell you what, anytime I've been in my darkest moments, and there have been some dark moments. I remember my daughter was in an automobile accident and was in intensive care for over a week. And every night, I don't know how people broke into our house, but they did. Every night there was a casserole sitting on the counter waiting to be shoved in the stove, or something in the refrigerator with microwave instructions when Kathy and I get home at 10 or 11 o'clock at night. You just, you know, and when things look pretty dark, you find out how awesome people are. And give people a chance to be awesome, because they'll be there for you.
Dave, thanks for your time today.
Hey, thanks for asking. Anything I can do to help, I'm I'm all in.
All right.
So, thank you.
Thank you.
I would like to do at least one more of these with actually somebody who kind of went through the Atlas Blizzard, and maybe just give people who are not even yet starting to pick up the pieces in Nebraska a look at what's possible as far as recovery is concerned, and how they went about tackling those things, maybe, if you will, eating that elephant one bite at a time. So probably won't get it out this week, but in the near future, I would like to sit down with somebody who went through the Atlas Blizzard and how they recovered. So we'll see you real soon with another episode of the Working Cows Podcast.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.